Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com.
Leaders in triathlete sweat testing and hydration with multi-strength electrolytes that match how you sweat. You can get 15% off with the code OxygenAddict15.
We've also got a sponsor of Team Oxygen Addict.
Event-specific training plans, coaching guidance from Coach Rob Wilby, and supportive teammates in a private Facebook group.
Hello, that's me. And our other sponsor is tgstore.co.uk.
Which is the home of premium sportswear, including Gore bikewear, Gore runningwear, and Aquasphere wetsuits. You can get 10% off with the code OxygenAddict10.
And also thanks to our patrons. We've got new patrons this week. So thanks to Ryan Simpson, Dan Lees and Mark McBride for supporting the show. So Hels, how on earth are you? It's lovely to speak with you again.
Rob, I know. We did our little run, didn't we, the other day? We had a catch-up again,
Friday lunchtime date. It was very pleasant indeed. We thought we were going to get a run in the snow, but by the time you'd driven to work at 5:30 or 4:30, with snow everywhere, and by the time we met up at lunchtime,
yeah.
Was it 4:15? Oh,
4:15, get it right.
That's cold and dark and early, man.
Horrible, yeah.
By the time we met up, there wasn't a single snifter of snow lying around anymore, was there?
It all gone. It was so weird. It was just bizarre. Yeah, so alarm goes off 10 to 4. First thing I do, looked out the window, think, oh no, I'm going to have to get all that through that snow to get to work. Right, I'm going to go around the long way. Oh my God. Then you have to like clear all this blooming snow off your car, which is what you don't want to be doing at like 10 past 4 in the morning. And then you suddenly come out of work and it's daylight. When did that happen? And it's like, what? It's all sunny. And then where's it gone? And then we were just running through mud again.
I need to sort out a pair of off-road shoes.
Well, yeah. So basically, we're running in the run, in the mud. And then Rob's like, Hels, we're going to have to move. We're going to have to move over to the road. Didn't move straight away. About another 2 minutes later, Hels, we're really going to have to move to the road. I'm just slipping everywhere here. Can't do this. So bad, then, turned to a little...
ice skating pasture. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
So much fun. It was great.
Yeah, man. Right, listen, let's leap in and talk about some results because our mate Lionel Sanders took out 70.3. Is it Pucon? Is that how we pronounce it in Chile?
Pucon.
Pucon. 70.3 Pucon, yeah.
Yeah, so down in Chile, so we had Lionel.
Nice, doesn't it? Sunny pictures down in Chile.
Yeah, it does happen to be their summer.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to believe when you're shivering here, isn't it? Of course it is. It's a different side of the universe.
Oh, love it.
I'm not very good with geography, but I can lift heavy things.
Oh, man. No, you can you?
No, not really.
No, that's it.
No. couldn't lift heavy things, so they said, go and do a coaching badge.
Oh, brilliant. Anyway, yeah, Lionel Sanders, who we've had on the show twice in the past fortnight, took out the win in 4 hours and 0.8, didn't he? And then Chilean Felipe Barraza was second in 4:06. Oh, just about 5 seconds ahead of the Argentinian Luciano Tacone. And Rob, I was listening with interest to your Lionel Sanders interview the other day.
Oh, it's good, isn't it? It's a good interview.
I really enjoyed hearing about the swimming and how he had switched from... switched to doing all of his swim training in the morning. I was like, yes, I am a fellow fan of that, Lionel.
It's working for him. It's definitely working for him.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. He's happy just to like hear to talk for another hour as well. He was like, oh, don't worry about it. Let's keep talking.
Oh, honestly.
And he's sending us his race suit, an autographed race suit for the charity prize draw that we're doing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, he is a top guy, isn't he? One of his freshy race suits coming through. So so thanks very much for that, Lionel. And you guys can go over and check that out. It's justgiving.com/crowdfunding/podcast, isn't it? That's right.
Yeah.
A lot of things to keep track of at the minute.
Oh, I know. So he did a 28-minute and 20-second swim, which was only 15th best, Rob. So I think he still would have been a bit annoyed at that because it was 3:45 behind... behind the top swimmer, basically. So he was still, you know, nearly 4 minutes out of the water back. But then he had race best bike split of 2:09, which is, superb.
But do you know what, though? He came out of the water on the shoulder of Jesse Thomas. So there were obviously some, you know, those guys were rock star Chilean swimmers. Mm. And it was 2 minutes down on Ben Collins, but only 3 seconds down on Jesse Thomas. Now, he's like a solid second pack swimmer. So it's hard to know, isn't it, when you don't know the Chilean athletes, how they might have been like Chilean
swimmers.
Olympian swimmers for all we know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So good for him anyway. Another victory him for there. And what a nice place to be racing this time of year, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then Barbara Riveros of Chile won the race for the third time. She's very much an ITU athlete and does Xterra as well. And she had a really good run split, basically, to take over Alicia Kay of the USA. Alicia Kay was second. And then Hayley Chura of the USA third. So by the end, Riveros only won by like 30 seconds. So it was pretty close there for the finish.
Yeah. Close racing, huh? Good stuff.
Chile.
You've been down that way?
I have been down that way, Rob, yes.
Have you? Have you actually been to Chile?
I have actually been to Chile itself, yeah.
Is it nice? Do you recommend it?
Oh my God, absolutely. I went to...
Really?
Yeah, I went to Argentina and then we went across the border for a couple of days into Torres del Paine National Park, which was just... Oh, it's just beautiful.
You're so well-travelled. That's one of the things I love about you. I haven't got any other friends who've travelled in Latin America.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think you have at all.
Honestly, Chile is an amazing place. And actually, I'm going to throw this one out there, Rob. So I know that my brother and a couple of his friends are going to fly down from Canada to Chile over the next week or so to go and do a race, which is called the Cruz. So you've actually run, it's a 3-day run. And there's like tents set up everywhere and you actually run basically around the Argentinian Lake District. But I think you go into Chile as well. So it's right on that border. It just looks incredible. It didn't sound like lengthwise. It didn't sound too crazy in terms of how far you'd have to run each day. Like maybe like 20 miles a day running or something like that.
Okay.
I think it's doable is what I mean.
Yeah, doable for you, Superwoman. Not doable for normal humans.
But over 3 days, if you're intense and stuff like that.
20 miles a day?
If you're walking it. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I guess. I hadn't thought of it like that.
Oh, yeah. You know, you could walk it still swiftly and...
Pretty full-on event that, though. 60 miles in 3 days. Camping.
It'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Yeah. How cool does that sound?
Yeah, it definitely would. Very cool indeed.
Anyway, Rob, there's been a... Yeah. Well, you should do for next year. Stick it on your list. It'll be nice to go down there at this time of year. Nice and sunny. Rob, there's been a little bit of news going on. Not loads, but we've got the odd bit of news, haven't we?
We have indeed. And news is sponsored by our new sponsor, tgstore.co.uk. Get over there and check out their Gore bike wear and Gore running wear. You can get 10% off with the code OXYGENADDICT10. Tell you what, Hells, my Gore-Tex jacket has taken a beating this last week.
Not surprised.
The weather that we've had, I don't think it's actually got dry over the past week. I've put it on, gone for a run, come back, hung it over the radiator, gone out again, come back, hung it over the radiator. My trusty, I think I worked out it's 12 years old now, my stinky red Gore-Tex pack light running jacket.
Oh my God.
And it's still going strong, to be fair to it.
Well, that's good. That's good. I want to know, Rob, how many times is it acceptable to put the jacket over the radiator before you actually, you know, clean it properly? I'm always on. I think, oh yeah, I'll do another run, and then you're like, yeah, I'll do another run if I'm on my own and not by anybody else.
I think that maybe my Gore-Tex jacket has been washed maybe twice in 12 years.
Yeah, okay, that's stinky.
Like, in all seriousness, in my head, because it's Gore-Tex, it's got some magical property that'll disappear if it goes in the washer. And I know that's not true, because when I wash it, I do it properly and I use the, like, whatever special thing you meant to wash it in, and then I wash it again with the special coating stuff, and it comes out like a new... I'm just lazy, aren't I? I'm just lazy. I need to go and wash that jacket.
Yeah, Javier Gomez is going to do 70.3 Dubai, because he wants to qualify for the 70.3 World Championships. But there's only a week between the 70.3 Worlds in Chattanooga and the ITU Grand Final, so that's going to be interesting. And then he...
The world's first, the 70.3 worlds.
Yes, a week before.
Oh, golly, I tell you what, you'll have sore legs going into the WTS final, won't you?
Yeah,
or maybe he totally won't. Maybe he's super, such a super rock star that it won't bother him that much.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. He says, and then he's probably going to do an Ironman in November.
Okay.
So he says here, I will finish the ITU Worlds in September, and then I'll have another month of like preparing to going a bit longer, so then in November I could compete. There's one in Arizona and there's one in Mexico, so he will see which one takes his fancy. So yeah, he has been speaking that Arizona or Cozumel is probably where he will be making his Ironman debut, so that's exciting.
It'll be exciting if he goes to Arizona, because there'll be a lot of people go to Arizona who've not had the race they wanted at Kona and go really fast there, don't they?
Yeah.
Like Lionel did this year.
Yeah.
So, can I imagine that, rocking up to your first Ironman and facing
Javier Gomez.
Lionel in like, well, him facing Lionel in 744 shape. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It's not like the easy introduction to just get around your first Ironman, because I don't care who you are, everyone's daunted by doing the first Ironman.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to worry about going 7:45 to win the first one, do you?
No. Oh, it'll be great, though, to see how he gets on this year, won't it? And he hasn't...
I think he's going to be really good at it. I think he's really strong. I think he's going to go really well, Hells.
That's it. I agree, because he's got the build for it, hasn't he?
Yeah. He looks super, super stocky, doesn't he?
Mm. Really, really cool. Rob, another line of news is that Braden Curry down in New Zealand is going to do the double, but I'm not talking Wanaka and Ironman New Zealand. He is going to make his Ironman New Zealand debut just 3 weeks after he attempts to win a fourth coast-to-coast.
That's pretty full on, isn't it? The coast-to-coast is such a massive event in New Zealand, and then... Ironman New Zealand as well. Good lad.
It's good, isn't it? So we like that one.
We sure do. Right, let's jump over. Oh, go on, sorry.
No, go.
I was going to say, let's jump over and head over down to Coach's Couch, because I'm dead excited about this, Hells. We've had a question through from Joe Skipper.
We have had a question through from Joe Skipper. And Joe's question is... Do you think you can go too easy, i.e. is there such a thing as junk miles?
Okay, so I'll tell you what, let's also read the second part of his question as well, because that'll give some context to the rest of the answer.
Which is, also, if you're on a steady ride or run, what would you say would be classed as going too hard for a steady run ride in terms of percentage of your FTP?
All right, cool. So obviously the advice here, Joe's asking as an elite athlete, so I'll talk about some percentages of power and stuff and then try and apply it to Joe, as well as trying to apply it to age groupers. So I think the first thing Joe's asking here is, do you think you can ride too easy? And I think the way to approach it is dead simple. You just look at your power and you break it down into zones, and you recognize that each zone has got a specific purpose. So our zone one is our recovery zone, and the purpose of that is going out and recovering from the efforts that you've done in other training sessions. I'm not convinced personally that there's a massive effect from doing a recovery session that's longer than about 90 minutes. I know some people, especially elites, when they've got days to fill, will go out and do really long 3 or 4 hour recovery rides all in zone one. I don't particularly hold with that. I think 90 minutes worth of a recovery ride is more than enough to get the blood flowing through your muscles, to clear away the waste products. And then I think if you've got more time, to go for a recovery swim. So I don't think you can go too easy, because in terms of that recovery ride, we're going to be looking at keeping it below 55% of FTP with a power meter. But I think you can do too much of it if you've got lots of time on your hands. I'm not sure Joe's in that category of having too much time on his hands, but yeah, I think that's the one thing to be aware of. Now, in terms of the next part of his question, on a steady ride, what would you say would be classed as going too hard? Well, again, we've got to look at what the purpose of that steady ride is. And so the steady zone that I talk about is zone 2 heart rate, or zone 2 power. And the sole purpose of doing that ride or run is to get your body to adapt to use fat more efficiently. So physiologists will talk about this concept of aerobic threshold, which is completely different to anaerobic threshold, which is the one people talk about most of the time. The aerobic threshold is if you're getting gradually more intense from like an easy walk, if you like, you've primarily fueling your exercise just by fat metabolism. And you'll get to a point where as you get slightly harder and slightly harder and slightly harder, there'll be an sort of kick in, if you like, of the carbohydrate metabolism to join in with this fat. Your body can't get any more energy per minute from fat, so it has to start using carbohydrates as well. And so the top of our aerobic zone, top of zone two, is defined in the lab as that point where when they do tests on an athlete, the carbohydrate metabolism starts to kick in. So for an untrained person, that might be just having a walk. You know, it literally might be that easy. For the majority of age groupers, we'll be talking somewhere in the mid zone two, or probably somewhere in the 65 to 68% of FTP. For elites like Joe, it might go as high as 76, 77, 78% of FTP, something like that. Now, the only way to totally accurately measure it is to go into a physiological laboratory. And you'll know, you remember our friend Dave Clamp, he's been in and had this done. And what they do is they put a very clever machine, basically they put a mouthpiece in your mouth that analyzes the makeup of the gases of the expired air, and that tells them exactly the point where the carbohydrate metabolism kicks in, so they can measure the intensity of exercise that happens at very accurately. And again, over time, what's going to happen is if you do your training right, the amount of power you can produce while still operating either entirely aerobically or primarily aerobically, you're going to get more power and more power and more power without needing to switch over to carbohydrate metabolism. So I'd say for the majority of age groupers, that 65 to 68% through to, you know, the more trained you are, the more experienced you are, probably the higher that percentage is going to get. And we often see power files from, I've seen Joe's power file from Kona. I think he was like 79 or 80% of FTP during his rides in his Ironman event. So that's about the level for him that the steady ride is appropriate at. So his body's going to get more efficient by hanging out at about that point, but it won't be the same for an age grouper. And that's enough talking from me before your head hits the desk at the phrase physiologists measure it in the lab.
Oh, Helen, no,
leaving the background.
No, not at all. I'm loving it. I was doing peak flow tests this weekend, Rob.
Were you, as part of your personal training thing?
Yeah.
Wowzers.
Yeah. That was it was interesting.
I'd have to get you down the lab. Down the lab. I think you'd be interested in having one of those tests done.
Yeah, I would love to, because then you can learn a little bit more about how your body works and everything.
Yeah, I mean, when you're training with a power meter, you can kind of get this idea of, if you see your power numbers increasing, you've got a good guide that that's what's happening. You know, you're getting more efficient, you're getting more power aerobic threshold. But if you go in the lab in, say, January, and you go in the lab in July, they'll actually tell you at your threshold you are producing this amount of power, and then you are now producing this amount of power. So some of the guys I've coached have been in and had that done, and it's a real nice backup mentally when the scientist says, yes, what your coach has told you is true. That's usually what it does.
That's cool.
Cool. So I'm just going to give you a little update on the old Team Oxygen Addicts, because we are now, Hells, we are open for business as of today, as we're recording. Monday the 16th.
Has it been a mad day?
Open. Oh, yeah. So I've been talking about how it's been closed for ages. We're open for applications now. So if you're interested in triathlon coaching, what you'll basically get is an event-specific triathlon training plan tailored to your fitness and your goals. Advice from me in the monthly group video coaching calls and private Facebook group as well. It's going to be the only chance to join this year. So if you like what you've heard, jump in. And we've got some special offers, Hells.
We love a special offer.
We love a special offer. Right. So join before Wednesday of this week, Wednesday the 18th of January 2017. So if you're listening later on, this will have gone, I'm afraid. If you join as a monthly member, you're going to get 50% off the joining fee. If you join as an annual member, which is about a 40% saving on the cost of being a monthly member. So it's a pretty good deal. You're also going to get a free online video swim analysis from Coach Hamish Shaw. So we're doing sort of remote video swim analysis now, where your friend can video you using a GoPro or using a mobile phone or a waterproof camera. Send the footage through to Hamish and get your Ant Swim analysed, just like he does in the flesh, but without you having to drive all the way to see him. So the first 50 people to join the team are going to get one of those free if they join as annual members. And as an extra sweetener, there's a free 4-week training plan available. So you can go to team.oxygenaddict.com/free-4-week-training-plan. And I'll put that link in the show notes, because I don't imagine anyone's remembered it, Helen.
No, I don't think so. It had a few too many dashes in. But yeah, check out the show notes.
Yeah, snappy.
Yeah, really. team.oxygenaddict.com. And on the podcast page of Oxygen Addict website.
Yeah. Coolio. Right. I think we should hear some more about your sweat tests, because last week we heard actually having it done, didn't we?
Yeah. So this week we are going to hear just a little bit more about the actual results. So this is the point whereby Johnny had uploaded everything into the computer, and he had looked at the different bits of, you know, sweat. And everything like that, and rate, yeah, sweat, that sweaty stuff. But you don't actually need to get sweaty to have your sweat test.
It's not nice to say, is it?
No. So we can hear now exactly what we found out.
My name's Greg. I'm in the University of Cambridge Triathlon Club, and I've just committed. I had heard about the test on Cup of Tri, so I thought I'd come along and give it a go.
You haven't come up from Cambridge, have you?
Oh, no. I was up in the northwest anyway, so it would have been a long way.
So, Greg, what are you... do you have a problem with sweating then at the moment? Or not necessarily a problem, but do you think you're a heavy sweater?
There's been a couple of instances in races where I've noticed cramping coming on, particularly in the run towards the latter end of the race. And I did get in touch with Precision Hydration, and I tried some of the products in a couple of races, and it worked a treat. So I'm actually thinking, it'd be better. I used the online tool, but I'd kind of rather have a more precise test and then just so I know exactly what's going on.
And how easy was that online tool?
It was very simple. It took less than 5 minutes to fill in. And then I corresponded with some of the guys at Precision Hydration as well via email, and just put together, you know, a simple race strategy of what I was going to use for my nutrition, and it's worked well so far.
Awesome. And what are you aiming for next year then, race-wise? What was on the plan? Well,
one of the reasons I've wanted to get tested, I've got a couple of warmer weather races. So I've got Lanzarote coming up, and then at the latter end of the year, I'm going to do Barcelona as well. So, yeah, the conditions are probably going to be a bit different than racing in the UK. So, yeah, I was quite keen to try and get it right first time round.
Perfect. We'll come and find out the results in a little bit, because you're at the electrode stage, I think. What about you?
I've just come from Salford. My name's Jeff. I'm looking to do a Bob Graham round in June, so do a lot of long distance running. Completed the UTMB.
The t-shirt's on there. Congratulations.
it wasn't my best time, so I'm just trying to, you know, fine tooth my hydration strategy more than anything else.
And Johnny, how does hydration maybe change for an ultra runner and a long distance triathlete?
Good question. So again, for both, there's a lot of similarities between the two. For those kind of distances, you've got to make sure you're starting in the right place, because that's the easiest way to start, you know, in a really bad way, is to get it wrong before you get going. And then for the ultra guys, you need to take into account the amount of the length of time they're going, and therefore the amount of stuff they're going to be taking on board in terms of nutrition, as well as, you know, the calories, as well as the fluids. And over the really long races and the back-to-back stage races, then flavour fatigue and other variables can come into play. And if you start hating your drinks, then you're not going to drink them. So, yeah, there's all sorts of little tips and tricks that we throw in there for ultra runners that are slightly different for those disciplines. There's also a lot of similarities.
So what did you use on the Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc?
Johnny set us up with a strategy using half tailwind and a 500 tablet, and then we went on to 1,000 in 500 ml of water, and I just worked through that all the way to the end. That's all I stuck with.
And were you cramping? Was it fine? Was it
no cramping at all? It was fine. Got me through it. It done well for me.
That's what we like to hear.
And had you done a lot of ultra running before that, and suffered?
Not really. No, I've not suffered. I just wanted to get a better strategy and plan when we're drinking. So I've tried numerous drinks, but I found this one works best for me.
And after 22 hours out on the trails, as Johnny was saying, do you get that, oh my God, I just don't want another sip? Or
to be fair, the different flavours, they were all right. I was fine with them. I've tried some that just not agree with my stomach at all. Yep. But easily digested, yeah, not a problem.
Brilliant. And someone else who you're about to start wiping their arm. So if I get you to introduce yourself as well.
Hi, I'm John.
And you're having the arm wipe there. And John, what are your plans for next year? Why are you having a sweat test on now?
Well, I'm a standing distance triathlete, but even just training for that distance, I get a lot of night cramps. And I'm just curious whether electrolyte loss could be an issue. I've tried 170.3, and that ended in a lot of cramp on the run. So just out of interest, really.
So, Johnny, this could be a classic. You can help, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of the situation I was trying to describe earlier. Your training volume, even as a short distance triathlete, is significant, and over that kind of training volume, your sweat losses are not insignificant. So, taking that into account with the testing we're doing today, and we can build a strategy that hopefully gets rid of those night cramps. We'll see.
Perfect. So you're getting the electrodes on.
Yeah, these just sit on your arm for 5 minutes, John, and they'll induce you to sweat just on the little 2p piece contact area that under the red one, and then we'll put a collector on your arm like we've got on these other gentlemen over here, and you're away. It's as easy as that.
Oh yeah. So compared to Claire and I, there looks to be more turquoise on that one at the moment.
Yeah, potentially, I think, slightly higher sweat rate. Like as you've indicated, you can see that he's already motoring around. And actually, look at the two side by side.
So that was Jeff and then Greg. Let's have a look at Greg's.
Not far behind.
No. See, there's still a little
Where's
bit of turquoise.
Guess?
Come on.
I think our ultra runner is going to have a higher...
I'm giving up betting now because I've lost too much money in the process. Yeah.
Greg has now finished the little sweat test, and so you're plugging it into the machine again.
Yeah,
and then
process,
we're going to
run him through, see what whether he's higher or lower. What do you reckon, Greg?
Higher or lower. We were like high 30s.
On best on the online calculator, so.
You're not far off, really. So in terms of concentration, you're a bit lower.
Yeah.
You fall on the bottom end of the bell curve at 25 millimoles of sodium per litre. But the sort of racing you're doing and the amount of training with your sweat rate that we've just seen, you feel the collector pretty much double the speed of you, Helen, would you know, lead to your net sodium losses being relatively similar to somebody in your situation, Helen, where your concentration is moderate and your sweat rate's moderate. Your concentration is low, but your rate's quite high. Okay. So the overall loss over a similar distance of racing, length of time out there, is going to be pretty similar. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk you through that once we've built your report.
And have you done the other one as well yet? Have you done Jeff's or not yet?
Yeah, so Jeff's come out actually very similar to you, with the same concentration as you. Mm-hmm. But again, it'll be a slightly different recommendation because of his situation as an ultra athlete.
Yeah.
He will increase his strength a little bit in comparison to you. So again, we'll pull up his report shortly and talk through it.
Right, so we've done the tests. You've got the results in front of you. Talk us through them.
Yeah, so we've tested a good handful of athletes up here this evening. It's been pretty busy for me. And we've run through a seminar and everyone's gone home with some product and a recommendation to go and test. And Helen stayed behind with a partner, Rich. We've tested both of you and you've come out relatively different, actually. So if we run through your reports, in terms of concentration loss, you've come out about 750 milligrams of sodium lost per litre of your sweat, Helen. And if we flick over to yours, Rich, you're at nearly 1300. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a difference in the amount of sodium you're losing per litre. And that, does that tally with your past experiences, Rich? We were talking about some of the things you might see if you're not taking on sufficient sodium during during the talk. Does any of that twig with you?
Definitely. The presentation where you highlighted fatigue in heat, and that would be tied in with probably not taking enough sodium on.
Where did that happen?
Most recently in Ayia Napa.
Right.
Party capital of triathlon. And also in the Bala Middle Distance, on the hottest day of the year in 2006 in Wales.
the only hot day in Wales.
Yeah, I'd gone into it in really good shape and I had a really torrid time on the run.
Okay. And what were you drinking then? What was your strategy at that point?
Probably ad hoc, more than an actual strategy.
Yeah.
Certainly drink to thirst, but probably not the right amount or the right stuff.
Yeah, the right concentration. So what we've put together for you here, and we'll run through yours in a moment, Helen, is a preload strategy that actually is the same for both of you. So before your big events, Rich, you'll be looking to take 500 ml of the 1500 strength, which is the strongest electrolyte drink we do. That's about 3 to 4 times the strength of the standard sort of industry standard electrolyte that you'll find off the shelf in the UK.
Yeah.
You do 500 ml that the night before your race and 500 ml the morning of the race. Most athletes will overdrink fluids running up to the event, so just keep a lid on your intake running into the event. You don't need to smash litres and litres of water, because you can actually do yourself a bit of a disservice by flushing out a lot of your electrolytes before you start. So just keep a lid on the volume you take in and increase your sodium as outlined in your sweat test report, and that should stand you in good stead before you start. Most triathletes shouldn't be drinking in the swim unless you need to work on your swimming a bit. But on the bike, we'd look to flick you to the 1500 on the bike, and then potentially look to use some sweat salts towards the back end where of the bike when you lower in your fluid intake a bit, and then switch fully to the sweat salts on the bike when you're racing your longer distance triathlons. And it might be that actually with your shorter distance, your middle distance triathlons, you won't need any sweat salts at all for that period, and you'll be taking on enough before and during the bike to see through the full event. For you, Helen, you'd be the same preload, but we'd be stepping you down a strength on the bike. So because your losses are a bit less and your volume loss is also quite a bit less than Rich's, your net sodium losses are going to be quite a bit less. So we're a little bit less aggressive with your supplementation during that period. So the 1000 should be perfectly all right for you on the bike. And as we've said to everyone this evening, you've got these reports in your inboxes already. So go home and have a good read of the detail behind some of the brief explanation we talked about now. And this is kind of the start of our relationship with you. So keep in touch on email and phone, running into the big events next year if you want to check things. We're all about keeping in touch with you guys and refining the guidance we've given you at this point. So take it away and see how you get on. Basically, this is the bounds for your trial and error from here on.
And perhaps a bit of a silly question, but hey, if you ask her, you've always got to ask these questions.
Go for it.
Like, okay, so if I'm to do an Ironman next year, if I'm going to be doing an Ironman next year.
Are we going to announce which Ironman?
Yeah, we can. So I'm going to be doing Wales next year. How should I transport this then? Am I do special needs or quite what? Because if I'm going to be on the bike for, 6.5, 7 hours.
Yeah.
That's a lot of liquid to get through, isn't it?
Yeah. Not everyone's going to be spoilt with the option of picking up their own fluids around an event. And if you can, then that's fantastic, because you can be a lot more flexible with what you can pick up, as you say. So you can take more electrolytes that you're familiar with. If you can't do that, then focusing on your preload before the event is going to be important. And also front loading the bike with additional electrolytes would be a good option to choose. So it might be that you increase the concentration of what you take on for the first couple of hours in the bottles that you can pre-mix. You can always, if you're a slower triathlete, take some of the sachets with you and mix them whilst you're on the bike. That's not a problem at all. But if you're smashing it and really trying to push on, then you might want to flick to use water and the sweat salts for the remainder of the bike at that point, so that you don't have to pick up fluids that you're not familiar with or mix any drinks on the move. And then similarly on your run, you'd be taking water rather than a drink that you're not familiar with and swallowing the sweat salt capsules that we've got in blister pack trays in your back pocket.
And I know I asked it in the presentation, but I think it's a, this one's probably a better question, we need to take energy on as well. So what's the best method to get the electrolytes in, but also for people who like to take the energy in a liquid form, how do we do that?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because the two components are, you know, very much interlinked, the hydration and your nutrition strategies. So the one thing I would advise, particularly for triathletes, is in the UK, we can get away with mixing a lot of your carbohydrates with your electrolytes and sort of the fluids you take on for hydration purposes only. But when you go into race in hotter climates or over longer distances, perhaps your fluid demand might increase by two or threefold, whereas your demand for calories will be relatively similar to what it was in a cooler situation. So if you've got it all mixed in one bottle and you're taking on three times as much of it, you can overload your stomach with calories and have some GI issues. So I'd advise, even if you're set on having your calories through fluids, then separate some of your electrolytes that don't have much calories in them at all from your calorific drinks, so that you don't have to always consume lots of calories with your fluids. When you're switching to half iron, particularly over the longer Ironman distance, I would personally look to use some solids or semi-solids to take in some of your calories, so that you don't overload your stomach with fluids. But it's a very individual thing. Some people function very well with gels. Some people work very well with just fluids or just solids for their calories. So you need to find what works for you. But just bear in mind that you do want some of the flexibility with your fluid intake versus your calorie intake alongside that.
I guarantee a peanut butter wrap will be cracked out at around about mile 70 or 80.
There's a secret to Helen's triathlon success right there.
No, that's really useful though. And the whole, you know, you've shared a complete, like, amazing, incredible amount of knowledge. And it's such a fascinating topic for a lot of people who perhaps don't know so much about it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to come up to Knutsford and just talk to a group of people about a topic that's sort of dismissed relatively early, when, you know, you pay a lot of attention to your bike and your wheels, and actually it's a very easy thing to understand if you pay the time and, you know, get the information as to you, what you need as an individual. We can tailor your recommendation to suit.
Cool. So it's good for you to know where you are on the old sliding scale, Helen, and know that you don't have to worry about massively loading with electrolytes, hey?
Yeah, exactly. So just doing like the preload and that kind of thing. But no, it was really good, and the whole experience of having Johnny and, you know, the team from Precision Hydration.
He's a good guy, isn't he?
Yeah, coming up to the tri club and meeting different people and explaining all about it and why it is so important that we do care about our sweat.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good presentation. I recommend anyone who's listening and they've got a club and get a few people together to get them over and have it done, because it was a very, for data geeks like us, it was dead interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was fascinating, in the whole history of essentially hydration, really, and how different.
I loved how it was like, here was this advice then, and then we said the opposite, and then we had this advice, and then they said the opposite again, and now here's what we've actually found out, and now we can test it. It was good.
Exactly. So you can check them out, and also don't forget there is a discount with the code OxygenAddict15, discount code off their products.
Yeah, cool stuff. Right, so let's jump over into our interview of the week. Our interview this week is with elite age grouper Gareth Petz. Gareth finished...
Bob, what's an elite age grouper? Come on.
What's an elite age grouper?
Yeah, surely it's just an age grouper.
Well, Gareth qualified for Kona at his first attempt.
Yeah.
He went over to Kona. He went 9:48 in Kona.
Yeah.
Which is pretty elite in my book. And he was, I think he was third Brit in his age group. So that's what I'm classing as an elite age grouper. Someone who goes qualifies in the first Ironman.
No,
and
I'm having a
course. Smashes it out of the park.
I think we can say he's a blinking amazing age grouper, but I just, the term elite age grouper.
You don't like it, do you not? I've put Helen's back up.
Yeah.
Sorry, Hel. All right, I'm just going to say he's just a good age grouper. He's just an age grouper.
He's an amazing age grouper, but I just think it draws a little line between elite age grouper and a pro.
All right, fair enough. I can't argue with you, Hels. So anyway, he's qualified for Kona. He's been to Kona, so we're going to hear his story about how he got into triathlon, how he qualified in his first race at Ironman Wales, and how he actually went and how his race in Kona went. Gareth Petz, welcome to the podcast, mate. It's really good to have you on. Thank you for taking the time. How are you doing today?
Hey, Rob. Yeah, no, cheers for having me. Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good today. It's a cold start today, but yeah, it's a good one.
It is, bless you. We've just set the call up and Gareth's sitting in his car shivering trying to do this call over Skype in between seeing various different clients you've got. So thanks for fitting it in, mate. I'm going to do the introduction on you for people who won't have heard of you. Basically, Gareth, I've got on the show. Gareth's one of the guys that I coach, but he's interesting because you are a very high achieving age grouper who's extremely busy with work, and we'll talk about that a little bit as well. But noticeable because you went to Kona this year, and in the 25 to 29 category, you finished in 9:48 overall in Kona, which is a solid performance for 33rd in age group and third Brit overall in your age group as well. So, first man, congratulations on that performance. You must be totally made up with it.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, it was a pretty overwhelming experience. It's been a pretty overwhelming year, actually. But yeah, it's awesome.
So listen, let's go back a little bit. Let's start by talking about sort of how you got into triathlon, what your sporting background was like, and things like that. So how did you end up getting into triathlon in the first place?
Well, I go back a few years now, nearly 10 years. Freshman at the university in 2007, sort of wandering around, almost aimlessly looking at the runners camp, running being my background, and next to them there was the triathlon table, and I pretty much got coerced from signing up to the running club to signing up with the triathlon club, and it kind of all went from there, really.
They stole you away from the runners, did they? That's a clever placement of the table right there.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So you came from a running background. Did you have any background at all in swimming and biking when you got into it?
Swimming, only that I was a lifeguard. That was about it. The only time that I'd get in the pool was once a week for lifeguard training. And I'd been doing a little bit of cycling, cross training. But it was, you know, up until I was 20, pretty much primarily a runner.
Gotcha. And so you got your hooks put into you by the old triathlon club at the university. And what was your experience like in your first event then, coming into a triathlon as a runner who didn't have much of a background in swimming or biking?
It was different. The swim was it was always tough. I always got the mick taken out of me throughout the year, because my first event was, when would it have been, it was the long May bank holiday weekend.
Okay.
And I got in the pool halfway through March.
Nice.
so swimming's always been a tough one for me, so I left it as long as possible and just try to focus on the running. And getting off the bike, kind of the transitions were interesting. I can remember coming in off the bike at about 15 mile an hour and trying to get off the bike. I went one way, the bike went the other, shoes went one way, and I didn't have a clue really where I was or what was going on. And then having to try and work out that I've got to try and run 5K after that was an interesting experience.
So you got the full-on beginner's experience there, eh?
Oh yeah, definitely.
For sure. So what year would that have been then?
So it would have been 2008.
Okay.
April, May 2008.
So sort of eight, nine years ago, I guess, really. And then obviously you got yourself into a good training routine with swimming and biking. And if we fast forward to, let's think, it'd be 2015, wouldn't it? 2015, you came up on my radar with your performance at the long course weekend.
Yes. So 2015 was, I've been coerced by one of my clients into doing Ironman Wales. I'd done Wimbleball a couple of years before, and one of my had done Wales in 2014, and he'd been thinking about doing it in 15, and he pretty much poked me off until I bit the hook into doing Ironman Wales. So I thought, well, I'll turn it into a marathon year as well. And I'd eyed up the long course weekend as being an ideal one to do a marathon, recover enough in time for Wales. And it being a good opportunity to scout out the bike course and the swim and get that bit of experience as well. Because the bike course, for anyone that doesn't know, on long course weekend is exactly the same as Ironman Wales. So it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's a good chance to point out, actually, for listeners who don't know, the long course weekend is essentially, it's Ironman Wales broken up over a weekend, isn't it? So you do the swim, swim Friday, bike Saturday, marathon Sunday, and that's done.
Yes.
Is it about 3 months before the actual event itself, something like that?
Yeah, it's done the second weekend of July, so it's plenty of time to get some prepping. So but the great thing about it is they give you other options, so you don't have to do the full routine. You can do half distance as well.
Yeah, so it's a good idea. I think we're going to see a lot more of that springing up in the near future. I think they've already got one in Mallorca, haven't they? And they've got one.
Yeah.
They had one lined up for Lanzarote as well, though I think that didn't happen this year. But I think they've got a great idea. So you chose the full option then? You went for the fully loaded.
I chose the full option, mainly because I'd never swum more than 1,900 metres at Wimbleball. And I didn't know how my body would cope. Even in the lake, I'd not swum more than 2K. So I was kind of really throwing myself in the deep end with that one. And I'd never swum with a big bunch of people either. So I wanted to get that experience. And with the bike, I went full course just to see again. I've never ridden that far. So it was really about just seeing where my body was. And then I guess on the Sunday, that was the race day for me, the Sunday, on the marathon. That's what everything, I think, was geared up towards.
So had you'd held yourself back a little bit on the bike, would you say, the day before? Or?
I felt I did. I managed to get in some good groups. The thing with the long course weekend, it's not, there's no draft busters. It's a sportif. Although there's probably about 10 or 12 guys that are there racing it. And I found myself in a really good pace line, a good sized peloton for the first 40, 50 miles. And then they dropped me, which I kind of expected. I let them go. And it was on the second lap that I started to catch them up. And I'm thinking, oh, hey, I'm doing all right, yeah. I managing to get up the climbs. And the second time up Saundersfoot was an amazing experience. Because they closed down that road, and it's almost like a short Alp stage. You know, it's about 300-400 meters up this ridiculous climb, and there are lots of people out, spectators, and I'm flying up past a couple of people that had dropped me in the previous lap, and I thought, oh yeah, I could do all right in this. That was good. It was an awesome experience.
Yeah, awesome. And then you went pretty well. Tell everyone how you did in the marathon the next day.
So the marathon, everything had really been geared up towards that. I'd had someone from my running club, Tony Locke. He'd been coaching me for probably the previous 8 months on my running and pretty much turned me around as a runner. I'd been setting PBs all through the winter and through the spring. So everything was geared up towards it. And it was set off nice and steady, get into a rhythm. And it was about mile 7. I could see, I'd worked out that I was 8th or 9th. And I could see guys in the distance, and I thought, I'll get a stop check on them. And I'd already done a little bit of a check on the quick guys. There's Richard Gardner. I think he's run for Wales for Commonwealth a couple of times. He's a pretty rapid runner, and I could see him up in the distance. He had about a minute and a half, nearly 2 minutes on me. And I felt comfortable. I kept on running. I'm looking at my watch. I'm thinking, split times are good. I was running 3 minute 50 kilometers, pretty consistent. And then I got to halfway, the half marathon, and I could see them in the distance. And it's there's about half a mile after the 13-mile mark. It's quite windy. You can't see anyone in the distance. And we get to a bit of straight road, and I come around this corner, and I could see two guys in front of me. And lo and behold, I'd managed to catch Richard Gardner and the guy in second quite quickly.
Nice.
And I held back a little bit, and I'm thinking, how shall I handle this? Shall I just run with them, see what they've got? But knowing that I'd caught them quite quickly, I thought, no, keep your pace, carry on running through. So I kind of ran through them. And for anyone that doesn't know, the Long Course Weekend is televised. With Richard Gardner being a local, there was a camera bike right on him. And I sort of ran onto his heels and then carried on past him. And then this bike starts going with me. And I've never had that before, so that was an interesting experience.
But I felt right strong.
I went through the halfway in just over a 1:20, and I felt good. I'm going through, and I managed to hold the lead then up at sort of mile 18 with Richard just on my heels. And then I started to pull away with 6 miles to go, still holding fairly good splits. And there was a motorbike giving me split times, and you know, I got to mile 20, 22, 23, and he shouts out, 3 minutes ahead of Richard, and I'm like, oh, wow, this doesn't feel right. This feels pretty good. And then with 1 mile to go, he gives me another time check that I've got 4 minutes on him. I opened up the taps and running back into Tenby to take the victory in a 2:40, and finding out later on that I'd actually run a negative split. I'd run the second half in a 1:19.
Nice.
Which was, yeah, it was a pretty awesome day. It's my first and only so far race win.
What a place to take it, hey? What a venue.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So that must have given you a lot of confidence then going forward into Ironman Wales on one hand, but then I guess that the unknown is always, it's trying to stick those three together, isn't it? The swim, bike, run, put them back to back in a 1 day event. So talk us through a little bit about your mindset approaching that then, because obviously on the one hand you must have had a lot of confidence, and on the other hand I'm guessing you must have had a lot of doubts as well.
Yeah, I had confidence that running was my strength. It's always been my strength. Even when I'm running bad, I still tend to find that I'm running past people. And I'd always decided that I was only going to finish the race. I'd had no intentions of, you know, Kona or anything like that. It was my first one. I wanted to be sensible and to experience it and to try, I don't know if it's possible, but to try and actually enjoy it. And with swimming being my weakest, and knowing that there was going to be 1,500 other people bashing for the same space in the water, it was going to be interesting. But yeah, the whole weekend was an amazing experience. The swim kind of, I guess, went to plan. I settled into what I would deem a good rhythm, and managed to come out of the water in one piece, which was a big relief for me.
I think a lot of people think that way, mate.
just
get to the finish line of the swim.
Yeah. And that's all the swim ever was. It was get out in one piece, try not to lose my goggles, try not to come out with a broken nose or anything like that.
And what was your split there? Do you remember what roughly was
I think it was a one, just over a 1:10. I think it was a 1:11.
Yeah,
like so I was 5 minutes quicker than I'd done in the Long Course weekend. So I was thinking, okay, this just don't get too carried away. Yeah, it's training's gone well. Everything's starting to come together. And it's a long transition at Ironman Wales. It's a good kilometre from running up from the beach to T1. There were people that were still
as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was interesting. Legs were flushed out. And then getting onto the bike. And the bike was, I'd already told myself, get into a rhythm, there were going to be, there were always going to be some big units that were going to go sailing past me. It's like, you know, deep down I'm a racer, and I get carried away. So many people will say that I've run with that I get carried away. Someone will run past me and I'll just try and run on their heels. And it's the same on the bike. If someone goes past me, I'll try and stay on their wheel. And obviously trying to hold the distance and try and stay with them as long as possible. But in Wales, I found it turned into the other way around, with it being an undulating course. Not many people actually came past, and I found that I got into a rhythm quite well on the first lap. And I got, having already ridden the course, I'd already mentally sort of acknowledged what my splits were. And after the first lap, I was just over 5 minutes up on long course weekend. So I told myself to settle down and to slow down a little bit, because I didn't want to burn out. But I don't know whether to say fortunately or unfortunately, I managed to get a 15-minute recovery with just over 20k to go, because I got a rear puncture.
Oh, really? I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, with just over 20k to go.
Oh, breaks your heart.
It was going up a climb as well, and I'm going past a couple of people, sort of, and then come off the tri-bus and sit up. And something felt a little bit, you know, it felt a little bit spongy.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, I know what this is. Please, please don't be what I think it is. And what's going through my head, right, is 20k to go. There's a lot, still quite a bit of climbing. If it doesn't go flat, you can get through with it. And I'm getting up this climb and it goes flat. It's a pancake. So I stop off at kind of the best opportunity, and try to change the tire. Taking off the back wheel. Now, I struggle. I struggle with taking the back wheel off a TT bike, and I still do.
Oh no, it's one of those.
It's not a pullback. It's a drop. It's a dropout.
It took
me a couple of minutes to get it off and to work out how the chain came off. I put the tire lever in, panicking, tried to get the tire out, snap the first tire lever. Thinking, oh, no, this isn't going to be my day. So I took a couple of minutes, composed myself, and then there was a couple of spectators that were a little bit further up. They come down and had my own little support crew. They were telling me, right, just chill, calm down, relax, got plenty of time. So it took me 10 minutes to change the tire. So I got back on the bike and carried on my way. So having a 15-minute recovery, I guess I managed to put a little bit of more of an effort than I probably would have to get that last 20k done. And I came into transition, and the support crew, mum and dad, were there and shouting and cheering at me. And I came out of transition, and my dad shouts at me, got my race position, and he said that I was 12th in my age group. So I was like, okay, cool, that's pretty good, let's go for a top 10.
Yeah.
So I settled into my rhythm almost straight away, and I found that I was overtaking people. I was running what felt like a comfortable position, and I was overtaking a lot of people. The first 5k of the run is uphill, and it's unforgiving.
That's the understatement of the year for the people who haven't seen the Wales course. It's horrible.
It is. But I'm a little bit of a mountain goat. Climbs don't seem to affect me as much as other people. I guess being slightly shorter and lighter, my stride length isn't shortened as much as others, and I managed to climb pretty well. So I got around the first lap, and my dad shouts at me, you're in six age group. And I was like, oh, that was a good first lap. I'll go for top five. And then I got around the second lap. And this is where, again, for me, it went wrong. it turned into 5 kilometre intervals, excuse anyone for listening, into toilet stops.
Oh, you got the full experience, hey?
Yeah, I got the full experience. It was 5K intervals with 2-minute recoveries for the next, what, 20, 25, 30K? So I was managing to run the 5Ks pretty quick, knowing that I had to get to that Portaloo. And then coming into the last lap, I found that I was passing people that had the fourth wristband on, and I'm looking over my shoulder trying to see what age group does it say.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see any of the 25, 29, so I hadn't actually seen any as I'd gone through, so I kind of accepted that maybe someone had gone past me and that a top 10 was it. And you turn left and then you turn right onto the promenade, and the finish line's in front of you, and you can hear everything. And I can hear the "You are an Ironman" of the guy that's just finished in front of me. And I come onto the red carpet and finish. And then I go across the line and finish, and I can hear it's really weird, but I can hear my dad shouting over everybody, even how loud it is. And I could hear him shouting, you were third. And I was like, nah, I didn't want to believe it. And I still didn't believe it until the results the next day that I was third in my age group, which I guess had earned me that place for Kona.
Oh, how fantastic, man. So, I mean, what a great story of, like, bad luck, the puncture, the GI distress, the multiple toilet trips, and still managing to get that slot. Wow, what a great story, man. So from a non-swimmer and a non-biker who's turned up at the university to join the running club, you've got like a 6 or 7 year journey to get to the point where you qualify for Kona in your first Ironman. So really, we've got to go straight to Kona, haven't we, really? The Wales race in 2015 qualifies you for Kona 2016. So tell us about that.
So I kind of self-coached myself using Joe Friel's training Bible.
Yeah, good book.
And I used that over the winter as well. And I got to, I guess, April, and I'd stopped really making any progress on the swim, and I was getting a bit frustrated. And that's where you came along, and Team Oxygen Addict came along. So I was like, I need something. And I've been listening to your podcast for ages as well. And it's like, I need something. I need to get somewhere. So I guess that's when I made contact with you, and sort of my training changed focus from the run to the swim and the bike, which kind of got me through the rest of the year feeling quite strong, actually. My swim times in the pool were finally making headway and coming down. I was putting out some good power on the bike as well. I think I'd gone from a 220 FTP at the start of the year up to in and around August time to a 250 FTP. So the training had changed.
Yeah. So what, that'd be 30 watts of that. So that's about, that's a big jump, isn't it? Sort of 14%, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was actually using the data as well, which I'd never done. Running I did, but with bike, I'd never used watts. I'd never used power.
Yeah.
I knew what it was, but I didn't know how to use it. And then I guess the year disappeared very quickly. It was September 27th before I knew it, and I was at the airport for getting ready for the flight to go over to the Big Island.
And I mean, what's that? Is that about a week out from before Kona?
It was
something like
12
that.
Days.
12
days.
12
before.
Days before.
Yeah. So I landed on the Thursday week before. I've never trained, let alone raced in anything sort of warmer than sort of 20, 25 degrees. Well, the UK, really.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I need to get as much acclimatization as possible, but not too much before, so it affects the last little bit of training. So I was out there 12 days before, getting used to the weather and getting some steady runs in and trying to experience the whole thing. And, you know, as far as I was concerned, and still am, that could be the only time that I actually go out. So I wanted to make the most of it and get the full experience.
Yeah.
And I guess I couldn't have got a better experience, I guess, a little bit thanks to you and Andy for setting up or helping set up the accommodation and who I was staying with.
Yeah, go on. Tell the listeners who we managed to. It was pure luck more than anything, really, wasn't it? But who did you end up sharing an apartment with?
So it was... I ended up staying with Joe Skipper, Andy Greenwood.
Andy Greenleaf, is it? Andy Greenleaf.
Andy Leaf, yep, Leaf, yep. Reese Barkley and Lucy Charles.
So talk about surrounding yourself with excellence.
So, you know, I knew that I was staying with the fastest British long course and the fastest age group swimmer, being Reese, and probably one of the fastest marathon runners out there, full stop, with Andy.
Yeah.
So I had so many questions lined up, and I thought, you know, I'll try not to get too carried away as well. That was the hardest part, is not getting carried away.
Yeah.
And these guys, those guys are all so experienced, and being a first timer, it was, I guess it could have been easy to get carried away with them, but I learned so much from them.
Well, that'd be a great question to ask you at this point. What would be like the two key things you picked up then from a couple of weeks staying with really high performers like those guys?
That they are normal people. You know, there's obviously they're pretty phenomenal, special as athletes, but you know, they're normal guys, and you can talk to them and what have you. But learning that rest and recovery is important. You know, a couple of times I'd come back to the apartment, and Reese would be led up on the sofa in his normal tech compression boot things, and just chilling out and relaxing. And trying to get my head around that was the hardest part. Sort of 70% of the time, they're sitting around chilling and relaxing.
Interesting, yeah. And we talk a lot about that, don't we? The importance of, like, once you've got the training done, doing nothing to let your body absorb the training. And that's real evidence of that in action, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it felt strange being out in Kona and spending a majority of the day in the apartment, either sleeping or sitting down drinking coffee. But it, you know, I was in having good company and being in the right place. It was pretty cool.
Nice. And then race day itself, then let's talk through how that went for you, because you made such massive jumps in your performance. I think it's gonna blow people's minds, really.
Yeah, so I'd gone into the swim, and I'd listened to what you'd said and what a few other people said, not being a strong swimmer, to sit back a little bit, not to get carried away at the start, because it is a fist fight. There's about 1,000 people that will be aiming to swim under a 105, and knowing that that's possibly what I'd be close to, I was like, it's a lot of people in front, which isn't, you know, it's not in a normal Ironman, you know, you don't really get that many people in front of you fighting for that space. So I'd listened to what you'd said and what Reese and Jared said to sit back a little bit and just let people go, which I did, and I felt that I got into a good pace and good rhythm. And for the first time, I'd managed to get my sighting right. And every boy on the way out, I pretty much bang on it with my right shoulder. So I'm pretty confident that I swam the shortest possible route and the same on the way back, hitting as close to the boys as possible. And I'm getting out of the water, and I stop my watch, getting into transition, and have a quick glance down at it. And it read 104, and I'm thinking, oh, bloody watches stop working halfway through the swim again. it's done that to me before. Someone's knocked it in the swim and it had stopped. And I thought that had happened. So, you know, I'm heading out of transition. And I'd already told my dad, you know, mum and dad were out there as well, to shout at me my time, my total time, on how I was doing as I was leaving transition. And he shouted 106. And I'm like, nah, that's not right, because my watch had stopped. So it can't be that quick. So I guess, yeah, I had swum a 104, which...
Well, you know what, man, let's give you credit here. You swam 103.59, so we're claiming that it's 103.
Yeah. Let's get...
Every second counts, buddy.
Seconds counts, oh, yeah, yeah. For sure. And then it was out onto the bike. And I didn't want to get carried away. People were flying past us. As we headed out on that weird little section at the start where you do a little bit of an odd loop out onto the Queen K for about half a kilometre and then you loop back around. And I kind of try to settle into a rhythm, get my shoes done up properly, get a bit of nutrition and hydration in, play the sensible game. And then it was out onto the Queen K. And there's been a lot of talk and everybody's been commenting about it, about the age groupers drafting and being in packs. And I guess being a little bit further back as a swimmer in the age grouper, it really was a peloton. But it was a peloton for as far as you could see.
Really?
In front of you and as far as you could see behind you. And it's not like people are riding on the wheels. And people are intentionally sitting on, or it looks like people are intentionally just sitting in packs. There's so much movement and so many people sort of going past and going forward that these groups and have just developed. And I was a little bit curious. So after the race, I'll come back to it. I had a little look and within a 3-minute section of where I was, there were nearly 400 people that had come out of the water.
Oh, wow.
So all of those people, I guess we just, as age groupers on the hour to the 106, we just can't all fit onto the road. But I'm conscious that there are motorbikes whizzing past us. And I'm like, I don't want to be done drafting here. So I just sat up and left these packs sort of spread out a little bit. And settled into my rhythm. And I guess got my head down and held the power numbers and got on with my race, really. It was a awesome experience heading out, on having read the books and watched previous years and everything, to be out there experiencing it.
And how did you handle the heat?
Relating.
How did you find that riding the bike?
Extremely hard. It was every water station, which was I think about 15k. I was taking two or three bottles. Two bottles went, you know, onto the bike for replenishment, and then one bottle went over me to try and keep cool. I think the easiest way to describe it is like you're riding on a radiator. the heat coming up from underneath you.
That's totally immense. How it is. Because it comes up from underneath as well, isn't it? That's what people don't understand, I think. It's not just like you're getting cooked from above, but it's the sides and underneath you as well.
Yeah.
So you rode a 5:16, which is a solid bike time in Kona for sure.
Yeah.
And then getting off the bike, obviously, you must have known you were well up there, certainly amongst, you know, the top end of the age groupers.
Yeah, so again, my dad shouted out at me my time, and I'm thinking, okay, this is good. I'd already, not that you should, set out an ideal timeline, and for the marathon, my timeline was a 3:30. So I was trying to crunch numbers as I'm getting into my rhythm to try and distract myself through the pain that I was going through the first couple of kilometres of running, and I was working out, okay, if I can run this 3:30, then I could be on for close to the 10 hours. which would have been amazing to get that.
Yeah.
And I got into the rhythm, and I was holding a little bit quicker pace than what I knew that I should. But I thought just go with it. It'll give you some time later on to maybe walk for a couple of minutes and still be able to do that 3:30 with the run being my strongest. And I got to maybe mile 10 and I could feel the onset of those blisters kicking in. So each step was getting a little bit more painful through that as well. So I'd taken your advice and I was starting to walk through the water stations, which are about every mile, take on a bit of fluid, take on a little bit of nutrition, and then carry on, which I think is actually what got me through. If I'd have tried to run the whole thing, I don't think I'd have made, I would have made the finish. That was always going to be the goal. I'd have done whatever it took.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd have run the time that I did. So finishing the race, I ran a 3:21 on the marathon as well, which was pretty amazing.
Super, super quick out in Kona, especially in that heat. And to put together a 9:48 overall in your first performance at Kona is, you know, man, I've got to give you a pat on the back for that. That's a really, really good performance. And you weren't that far behind Reese in the end, were you?
Yeah, well, I knew what he'd be swimming roughly on the swim, sort of between a 48 and a 50. And I did a little bit of a time check as he was heading back past me after the turnaround. And I got a time check on him. And I was like, okay, so trying to work out roughly how far in front he was. And he was about 15 minutes in front of me. And I knew we'd probably be roughly about the same sort of time. So not that I was trying to run him down, but, you know, I had in the back of my head that, you know, it could be possible if he didn't have a good race to slowly catch him.
Yeah.
So
good to have a carrot. To be that. So, listen, let's close this off with a couple of quick questions for you then. We're gonna do the finishing shoot section of the interview. So first up, what book has had the biggest effect on you as a person or an athlete?
I think it's one of two, Chrissy Wellington's or Mo Farah's autobiography. Having read them both and what they went through to get to where they are, the struggles that they went through, and to know that guys that are although they're elite, to get there, they've been through some dark moments as well.
Yeah, oh, that's good. I like that. And in terms of a mantra, what do you say to yourself when it's really hurting?
It's there are people worse off than you that are doing this.
Nice.
So to use that as a little bit of inspiration to keep myself going.
Yeah, good. I like that too. If you could only do one of the three sports, which one would it be and why, from swim, bike and run?
Oh, that's easy. That's running.
Running,
I guess, in, you know, it's running since I was, you know, since I can remember. As long as I can do one thing, I've got to be able to run.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. That would be my go-to as well.
Yeah.
And finally, what's one idea that you wish you'd known 5 years ago? One training idea, ideally, that you wish you'd known 5 years ago?
How to pace myself.
Interesting.
I'm renowned in training sessions for smashing it out in the first couple of intervals and then dying. And I do exactly the same thing, or had done exactly the same thing in races, just smash it out at the start and blow up. So I wish I'd known that sort of 5-6 years ago, how to pace myself.
Nice. All right, well, listen, man, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the podcast. We really appreciate it, and it's great to get your story down as someone who's come into triathlon from no background at all and ended up performing at the highest level, actually in Kona, and especially to be the first official Team Oxygen Addict member to cross the finish line in Kona. It's been a real great opportunity to have you on, Gareth. So thanks very much for coming on, buddy.
No, thank you, Rob. Cheers for having me on.
We wish you all the best for the future, mate. Hopefully we'll be able to get you on in another year's time to find out the progress that you've made.
Yeah, no, definitely for sure on that one.
Cheers, Rob. Thanks again.
Okay, take care.
All right, that's going to be you, Helen. Next year, I'm not going to be sitting there going elite age group of Helen. I'm not, because that upsets you and offends you.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say.
Age group of
Helen. Age group of Helen. Winner of the Kona Fruit Bowl.
What?
Helen Murray.
That's a load of rubbish.
No pressure, Helen.
That is a load of rubbish, along with elite age groupers. It'll be interesting to see what other people think about that, because clearly I sound rather opinionated about elite age groupers.
It's not like you, that Helen. I think you maybe need your dinner. I think you're getting a little bit hangry. You see, this is what she's like, listeners. This is what she's like when she doesn't get enough to eat. Rich, if you're there, mate, will you get her a brownie?
I probably do need some food, but
I'm going. I'll tell you what, man, you're scaring me. We've never seen the side of Helen before. It's officially on tape. The hangry Helen.
Oh man, I just don't.
Oh, it's funny.
I just don't agree with the term elite age grouper. Because there's elite athletes and there's age groupers.
You've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. Our sponsors have been precisionhydration.com, Team Oxygen Addict, and tgstore.co.uk. Thanks very much for listening. I've been Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And I'm pretty terrified of her right now. So thanks for listening. Tune yourselves in next week for another edition. We're going to have an interview with Sarah Piampiano, who's finished seventh at Kona twice as a pro. So check that out, because she's awesome. And it's a great interview. Thanks, everybody.